We're holding on page Bays in Gittin Ois Dalid. So we learned, the last thing we learned yesterday was a story. Well, we learned a couple of things yesterday that involved where a person is writing a posik in a letter that he should, even part of a posik that he should do sirtut, that he should score lines on the paper or the parchment so that the lines come out neat. We had, to begin with, we said that Rabbi Yosser didn't do that one time, and Rabbi Yosser criticized him for that, and Abaye says, listen, you know, he didn't know the halacha. And then we had that Rabbi Ukva sent a message to Rabbi Lazar asking what to do about someone who's harassing him, and Rabbi Lazar answered back with a pasuk with the lines scored before he wrote the pasuk. And then the back and forth about that. I forgot to mention yesterday, actually, an interesting point that Rabbi Nachum Chernobler brings on that from the Baal Shem Tov. What Rabbi Lazar was telling him, basically, is the reason why you're having this trouble with this guy, where the Gemara identified him as Gniva, is ultimately because the Eibishter wants more avoida from you. So therefore, so daven or learn, as the case may be. And then once you're bringing yourself to that higher level and you're learning, you're davening, however we understood doim l'Hashem meant, then automatically your troubles will go away, because the only reason the Eibishter brought them on you in the first place is to motivate you to daven and to learn better. So the Gemara continues. Shocholei the Ma'ukva. Here's another example of a letter that involves sirtut. Shocholei the Ma'ukva. They sent a message to Ma'ukva. Zimra minolon de osir. Where do we know that singing is osir? Now, what kind of singing are we talking about? So Rashi explains we're talking about singing at a party, based on the shtoris, at a party. So that would mean, in other words, they're not asking about singing and playing music in general. Tosfos also discusses this point in some detail. What exactly are we talking about? So Rashi and Tosfos both hold that the problem is doing at a party where they're drinking wine. So then to have the simcha of drinking wine and you're having singing and music is too much simcha in the time of Golos. As opposed to, according to them, it would be fine at other times. On the other hand, the Rambam takes a view that it's also that instrumental music is always also whether at a party or not, based on a relevant Gemara in Bava Basra that he learns. Accordingly, the post can discuss it. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch. It's really not a well-known halacha at all. Like this, we all listen to Jewish music all the time, and nobody ever knows there's an issue with it. Really, al pi halacha, it's not so simple. The various hetedim there are for it. First of all, you do have the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos that where it's not at a drinking party, it's not such a problem. But in addition, also you have certain other exceptions that the post can point out. One of them being it's allowed where you're singing songs of praise to Hashem, as many of our Jewish songs and music are in fact just that. Another point is it's allowed when it's for Dvar Mitzvah, for example, to be Mesameach Chosen V'Kala. And then Poskim Achronim talk about that, for example, a person needs music in order to relieve stress. A person is stressed out because their job or whatever it is, and they need music in order to relax themselves, and that kind of thing would be mutter as well. But some music where it's not for any of these things, and in particular, they talk about, based on a different Gemara, when people in those times would sometimes, like really rich people, would go to sleep and wake up with music playing. Like they'd have a personal orchestra in their house. So does that apply now? Days where each of us has a personal orchestra in our pocket, a phone, and it's not so simple. Anyway, so they asked him, where does this issur come from? Sirtut for Kosovo. So he did, again, he did sirtut. He scored lines on a piece of paper before he's going to write the pasuk. The Kosovo, and he wrote them the following pasuk. Al tismach Yisrael, do not rejoice Yisrael, el gil ka'amim, with the kind of joy that the goyim have. So in other words, this kind of thing, whatever it is, however we learn according to the different Rishonim about the issur of music, it would be acting with a kind of simcha that's appropriate for the goyim, but not necessarily appropriate for us. Marsha points out that the previous pasuk right before it talks about the golos, that Hashem is going to burn the cities of Eretz Yisrael and so forth. So therefore, now this pasuk we understand is talking about the time of golos. Marashah, by the way, also mentions a point in it that relates to today's Tillim. In today's Yom Yud Gimel, in Tillim today, we had the Psukim Yosichu V'Yoshve Shar, the people who sit at the gates, the Goyim, talk about me all the time, when Guinness Shoyse Shecher, and the one when they're singing, when they're drinking alcohol. And then the next pasuk is V'Anis Tfilosi, that my Tfilah is to you at a time of Eis Ratzon. So one point being, it's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch. That's the reason why we say that pasuk Vanis Filasi on Shabbos afternoon. We're saying, look at the goyim. They go and they get drunk and they whatever, and they don't, and they do all kinds of horrible things at the time. Whereas we drink and we have a great meal on Shabbos afternoon, and then we come to shul to daven mincha. So now, in a similar vein, Marshall says, you see over here that there's a hint over here to the idea that even in Golus we do sing in davening. And in fact, that's also one of the points that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that singing during davening is a valid thing. So therefore, that hints at this also in today's Tillim. So again, he sent them this passage from Hosea that says that Jewish people in the time of Golos should not be rejoicing like the way the Goyim do. So they want to ask, why did he use that pasuk? Why is he instead send them a different pasuk from Yeshaya? When they're singing, they will not be drinking wine. Yemar sheicher l'shoisav, the strong drinks, the alcoholic drinks, will be bitter for those who drink them. So we see from there also that you're not supposed to be singing while you're drinking wine. Where there it's more clear that Altis Machisolo, Gil Ka'anim, is saying a general statement, don't rejoice the way the Goyim do. That could mean all kinds of things. It could mean don't put up, it could mean don't put up colored lights like they do on their chogas or whatever. How do we know? It means singing. Here this Pasuk in Yeshaya clearly mentions singing and music. And the answer is, Imeahu, yeah, but if he brought them from that Pasuk, Havamina, then we would think Hanimila Zimra Demona. That means instrumental music is also, because when he says, Bashir lo yishdu yoyin, the Bashir would mean with instrumental music. But you would think, and in fact now Moshe points out there's machloikas in several places in Shas when the Levim sang and played the instruments in the Beis Mikdash. What was the primary part of that? Was it mainly the vocals were the important things and they just had the instruments to make it sound better, or was it the other way around? The main thing is to play with instruments. Now it's here you have the pasuk just mentions shir, which could mean either one. Marshall points out, on the other hand, the psukim right before it in Yeshaya mention various kinds of musical instruments, tupim and kinar and whatever, and therefore there's justification to understand that the pasuk that the Gemara quoted over here would be referring to instrumental music, but not a cappella. Avol depuma shori, you would think that the a cappella, vocal music, would be mutter, kamash malon, and therefore he's telling us that not. Again, subject to that machlokas rishonim, what exactly is the scope of the iser, and then you have again all the various hatedim that we talked about. Okay, again, the Gemara brought this in because it's another example of an amora scoring lines, doing sirtut before he writes out a pasuk to give them an answer. Okay. Now, the other thing we mentioned before in this, so the previous piece, Ois Gimel, we had two major themes in it. One was this point about Sirtut, and the other was the advice that Rabbi Lazar gave to Ma'ukva when Gniva was harassing him, is he told him, Doim LaHashem, be silent for Hashem, and Hashem will deal with them for you. So now, the Gemara brings another thing in that connection, as far as a Yid being the Milo of a Yid being silent when somebody else is harassing him. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Huna bar Nosson Rav Ashi. Rav Huna bar Nosson, who was one of the Amiroyim, he was also the Reish Kalusa. So he asked Rav Ashi, "My dichtiv, what does it mean a posuk in Yeshua, v'kina v'dimona v'ab odo?" So what does this posuk mean? Amalei, so Rav Ashi says, it must have also to Eretz Yisrael kachoshim. It's listing the towns in Eretz Yisrael. This is part of a section in Sefer Yeshua that talks about where it goes through each shevet and describes the borders of it and then talks about the cities that were within the territory of that shevet. So when it goes through Shevet Yehuda, it goes into a lot of detail and it lists in each area the cities that were there. So these are three names of cities that were there. Rav Huna bar Nosson answers back, Otu anolo yadayna de masvasa de Eretz Yisrael kachoshiv. You think I don't know that it's listing the cities of Eretz Yisrael? That wasn't what I was asking what pshat in the pasuk is. Ella, but rather I wanted to tell you a verse that I heard on it and see what you think of it. Rav Gvia mer Giza omavahochi. Omavataima. Rav Gvia mer Giza said the following explanation, the following drosha on it. That we dash in the words, the kina is similar to the word kina with an aleph, which means, now kina generally means jealousy, but Rashi points out it can also mean anger. So it means, kol shiyesh le kina al chaveri, when a person has reason to be angry on somebody else, that the other person has been harassing him, the doimim, but he's silent, demonim, loshen doimim, Sheikhan Ade Ad, then Hashem who lives forever and ever, Ad Odom, Eloshan Ad Ad, Oisaloy Din will execute Din on his behalf. meaning, in other words, that you have. This person, he does, that apparently we're talking about, he doesn't have the ability to go to Beis Din. There's not, it's a situation that Beis Din can't deal with, whether because there's no Edim or whatever the situation is exactly. In the previous case with Ma'ukva and Gniva, apparently it was also something like that. And on the other hand, he doesn't complain explicitly to the Eidishter, which is called Moser Din Achavei, right? He would have a right to do that. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that a person who is in that situation where somebody is causing him trouble and he doesn't have recourse in Beis Din on earth, he would be entitled to be Moser Din Achavei, right? But nevertheless, the Gemara there says in Bava Kamma, it's not a good thing to do, and the person himself gets in trouble for it. So here, where he doesn't, then on the contrary, Hashem will execute judgment on his behalf. So therefore, that's the Jorash Arkinu V'Nimoyin Avad Oda. Why Davka? You have many psukim over there back to back that list three or four at a time, the cities in Shevet Yehuda. Why is he Davka coming on this pasuk? There's a number of interesting points about it. Marsha says the reason is because they have the hays, each of them has a hay at the end of it. Now the hay, after all, the silent letter. Why does it need to be? The cities could just as well be the kin, dimoin, and adad. Why the fact that each of them has a hay at the end of it gives us reason to darshan that there's something special about these cities. Therefore we're darshan in that way, and we're saying the hay then represents Hashem. And the Oisaloi Din, Marsha points out, also because the last hay of Hashem's name represents Malchus, and it represents the Din of Hashem, and therefore it represents this point that Hashem will execute Din and judgment on his behalf. That's Marsha's explanation about what's unique about the names of these cities. There's a couple of other explanations. Another Maram Shif makes a point, the fact that you have the doubling of the name, Ad Oda. Why a double name like that? I mean, Pashas, you would say, okay, that's what the Goyim and Eretz Yisrael, the Knanim, named the city, and now the Jews took it over. But still, the Gemara assumes that there must be a reason for a drasha on it. And the next pasuk that the Gemara is going to bring also has doubled names like that. So that's another reason to think that these are special. Then there's also an interesting point that a number of the Mefarshim bring up. Now, you have in those psukim in Sefer Yoshua, it goes through, as I said, it goes through the cities of Shevet Yehuda. It divides them by regions. So it talks about in this area, you have this city and this city and this city, and the total number is X amount. In this region, you have this and this and this, and the total is such and such. With this area that where these three cities are mentioned, you have, depending on how you count it, either 35 or 38 cities, but at the end, when it gives the total, it says 29. So what's going on? Where's the discrepancy? So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that there are some cities over there that are not actual cities, but rather are meant there for a Jerusha. So this one, and the Gemara is going to point out another pasuk that also has three names in it. So therefore, by subtracting those, you have 35 minus 6 gives you 29, and therefore that explains the total. The Malbim gives an interesting explanation of it also. He says the vort is, the Chachamim knew that, for example, here, Kina is a city that deserves to be recorded, but Dimona and Ad Oda are just like little suburbs next to it. So Rav Huna Bar Nosson is asking like this. I understand, of course, the Pasuk wants to list the cities of Eretz Yisrael, but it's not going to list every tiny little favorf in a village. So why is it, if it's mentioning Kina already, the main city, why is it also mentioning its suburbs, Dimona and Ad Oda? So the reason is because they had this expression, they had this teaching us about the importance of being silent when a person is being harassed by somebody else, and they attached it to the name of these cities, and therefore when Yeshua is recording the names of the cities, he wrote down not only the name of the city, but also the names of the two suburbs that helped make the Jerusha. So that's the Jerusha. So basically, Rav Huna Bar Nosson is saying to Rav Ashi, what do you think of this Jerusha? Omalei, so Rav Ashi says, Elamayata, by that logic, if you're going to tell me you can darshan these psukim, what about the tsiklag umadmano vesansano hochinami? What about another pasuk in that listing over there, in that same section of the listing, when it mentions these three cities? Are you going to say the same thing also, that you're darshaning them? And here also, you could argue, they have hays at the end that seem to be unnecessary, madmano and sansano. They're doubled names, especially sansano. And you have, they're in that section with the six or eight extra cities. So Hochinami, you're going to say there's a drush on it. Omalei, so Huna Bar Nosson says, I don't know, but Ihaver Rav Gvia mi Be'ar Giza Hocha, if Rav Gvia mi from Be'ar Giza were to be here, have a Omabot timer, then he would give a good explanation. I don't know. I don't know the drusha that he would say on it, but I'm sure he would have a good drusha. Well, eventually, somebody did come up with a good drasha. Rav Acham from Bechayza Amar Bar Hochi. Rav Acham from Bechayza gave the following drasha on it. We don't have the sort of Acham Ebei Choyza mentioned elsewhere in Shas, but interestingly, Reb Shmuel Goin in his Igeres has a different girsa that the name is Reb Acham Ebei Chosim, and he identifies him as one of the early Rabbanim Sevaroi. That Rabban and Sevaroi were the couple of generations after Shas, the Gemara as we have it, the Talmud Bavli was put together by Ravina and Ravashi, but then you had Talmidim of theirs after that who continued for a couple of generations who added little editorial comments here and there in the Gemara, and they're called the Rabban and Sevaroi. So then Mr. Shira says that this Rab Acha over here was one of them. So in other words, what happened was so Rav Ashi and Rav Huna bar Nathan are talking about it in their time. Rav Ashi left the question open, and that's how it was in his original edition of the Gemara, but later on came Reb Acha over here and gave an answer, and then it was recorded in the Gemara. Anyway, so Omar Bahachi, he said the following drash on it. Kol mi sheyesh letzakas legima al chaveri, a person who has complaints of parnasa against somebody else, namely that the other person is interfering with his parnasa, open competing business or whatever, v'doimim, and he's silent. So again, siklag, we're darshaning as tzakas legima. Mad mana, we're darshaning the dalad mem in it as meloshin doimim. Shoichan besneh oisaloidin, then Hashem, who dwelled in the thorn bush where he appeared, from which he appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, oisaloidin, will execute judgment on his behalf. So yes, you can darshan that pasuk in the same way. Why is it in the one Jerusha we're referring to Hashem as the one who's forever and ever, and the other one in the Sneh? So there's a couple of different points on it, one of them being that in the first one we're talking about Sam, somebody is harassing him, so then we're saying Hashem lasts forever, so therefore and here you have also, so the Iyun Yaakov points out, this person then is being patient, he's not trying to jump the gun and get back at this other person, so in a way he's acting like Hashem, Hashem is eternal, and therefore, the Pasuk says elsewhere, Hashem is in no hurry to pay back his enemies, because he can always get them either in Olam Hazeh or in Olam Habah. There's no rush. So this person is acting like that as well. Therefore, Hashem, who is eternal, will stick up for him. As opposed to the second one, where the other person is interfering with his parnasa, representing, in other words, that now he's downtrodden. He's like the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So therefore, Hashem, who was in the Sneh, representing Imo and Eichet B'tzara, will come and stick up for him. So yes, both of these psukim can be darshan that way. There was a vort from Rabbi Malach Lezhensker on the tzakas legima al chaver v'doimim, also has another meaning on it. The simple meaning we're saying is that he has a complaint of parnosa against the other person, but instead of going and then doing something about it, he's quiet and he leaves it up to Hashem to deal with the matter. But Rabbi Malach has a vort on it that it means also when the person has reason to daven on behalf of somebody else's parnosa. Now he could make a big public spectacle of it. Look what a good friend I'm being to you, that I'm davening on your behalf. But instead, doing it, he does it quietly, unobtrusively. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oiseledin, and the Eibishter will take up his cause and help him and help the other person. Since we were talking about the Isser of music, because it's not appropriate to have this kind of simcha in the time of Golos, so now the Gemara brings another discussion that relates to that. The Reish Galusa, who was the governor of the Jewish people in Bavel. So he asked Rav Huna, Klila Minolanda Osir. How do we know that a crown is Osir? What kind of crown or tiara? Rashi explains we were talking about ones that Chassanim would wear. Sometimes they would make them out of gold or silver, and then they would treat them with a chemical process involving sulfur and salt to make them colorful, and a Chassan would wear those. Other times they would instead make crowns like they would make wreaths on their heads out of as roses or hadassim. So the Reish Galusa asks Rav Huna, how do we know that such a thing is also? So Rav Huna tells him it's an Isser Dirabanan. There's no pasuk about it, but there's an Isser Dirabanan, Ditznan, as we learn in a mission at the end of Soita. The Pulmos Shel Aspasionus, during the war of Aspasionus, this is the war that led up to the Churban. Aspasionus was the Roman general, Vespasian, as he's called in English, who led that siege and led that initial fight against Yerushalayim. And then, as we'll learn later in the Masechta, when Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai had himself smuggled out of Yerushalayim and talked to Aspasionus and told him, you're going to be the emperor. And sure enough, soon afterwards, the news comes that they had appointed him. So he goes back to Rome and takes up the throne, and he leaves his son Titus to continue the war, and eventually, and shortly after that, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Anyway, so at that time of that war of Aspasianus, Gozral, after his Chasanim, they made a Gzera that Chasanim shouldn't wear these kinds of crowns, Ba'ala Eros, and also they made a Gzera that you shouldn't play an Eros, which is a type of tambourine-like instrument, at weddings, because that brings tremendous Simcha, and the Chachamim wanted to curb the amount of Simcha that we're having. Tosfos, by the way, gives a different explanation of this Akris Chasanim. Tosfos says it may not mean tiaras that they actually wear on their head, but more like a canopy that they put over the Chasan's head. A freestanding canopy, like, or hanging canopy. Anyway, so Rahuna is saying the reason you're asking why a Chosin can't wear a crown or have this canopy over him is because of this Gzeira de Rabbanan. Well, the Gemara continues, Adar Hochi, while this was going, while they were talking about this, Komer Rahuna Lachnuyi. Rahuna got up to go to the bathroom. Omele Rav Chista. So now Rav Chista was also there, and he says to the Reish Galusa, I'll tell you a different source. I can show you a source for it from a posik. Rashi points out that Rav Chista was a Talmid of Rav Huna. So he wasn't going to speak up in the presence of his Rebbe. You know, we just had those of us who are learning Shlosha Parakim of Rambam just had that a day or two ago, that a Talmid is not allowed to do that. He's not allowed to speak up in the presence of his Rebbe unless his Rebbe gives him permission or unless it's a case of Chilul Hashem. He sees somebody doing an Aveira. So here, Rav Chista wasn't going to speak up as long as Rav Huna is there, but now that Rav Huna got up to go to the bathroom, then he says, he says, Kruksiv, there's a pasuk where we see this point that Chasanim nowadays should not be wearing crowns. The pasuk goes like this, in Yechezkel, Koy Omar Hashem Elikim, so says Hashem, Hosir HaMitznefes, remove the Mitznefes, which means the turban of the Kohen Gadol, V'horim HaAtarah, and lift off the crown, Zois loy zois, this not this. The Gemara will explain later on what that expression means. Hashaf, and this poshet chapter means this won't be this. In other words, things are going to be completely changed at the time of the Churban. Hashafola agbeya, what's now low is going to be brought high. Vahagavoya hashbel, and what's now high is going to be brought low. So in poshet chat, in context, the poshet is talking about it's a nevuah about Sifkiyahu. He's going to lose his crown, he's going to lose his throne and his kingship and everything because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. And there's going to be a churban and a golos, and he's going to wind up in jail and bavel. So now he's on top, he's the king, and he's going to wind up in jail. And meanwhile, Yechonia, who is now in jail and bavel for several years already, is eventually from him is going to come the continuation of Malchus Beis David. Anyway, so in poshet chat, it's referring just to the fact of Sifkiyahu's downfall. But Rav Chista says, "V'chimain mitznefes etzal atorah." What does the mitznefes and the atorah have to do with one another? Mitznefes is the turban of the Kohen Gadol, and the atorah it refers to on the face of it to the crown of the king. So the point is, Marsha explains, the point of the question is, why are we putting the mitznefes first? Historically, what disappeared first is the Atarah, the crown of Jewish kings. That ended with the first Beis HaMikdash. During the second Beis HaMikdash, yes, you had the Hashminoim, and you had Hurdus and his dynasty, but they weren't real kings, especially for a large part of the time, they were under the control of the Romans, they were puppet kings, as opposed to the Kohuna Gdola, lasted until the end of Churban by his training. So therefore, why is the pasuk putting the mitznefes, saying that the mitznefes is going to be removed before the atari? So Ella loy malach. So it comes to tell you. So there's that, and then there's other explanations. What the point of the question is? Why are we putting the if the nevuah is about Sidkiyahu, then why are we mentioning the turban of the Kohen Gadol? So Ella loy malach. So it comes to tell you, it's not talking about the atara. It doesn't mean the crown of the king. It tells you b'zman shamitznefes b'roish Kohen Gadol, when the mitznefes, when the turban is on the head of the Kohen Gadol, when there's a beis mikdash atara b'roish kolodam, then regular people can wear crowns, and so chasanim can wear these kinds of crowns. Or overhanging canopies or whatever. Nisalkam its nefes mirosh kohen gadol. Once the mitznefes has been removed from the head of the kohen gadol, once the beis hamikdash is destroyed and the kohenim are not wearing the big kohen anymore, nisalka atora mirosh kol adam. Then the atora, the crown, has to be removed from the head of every person. So you're asking where the source of it? Says Rav Chista, that's the source from that pasuk. So ad hochi oser Rav Huna. As they were continuing to talk about this, Rav Huna came back. And he saw that they were sitting and discussing this point. Omalei, so Rav Huna says, Kim, I swear in the Eibishter's name, midrabanan. The fact is, this issue of a chosin wearing an atara is drabanan from the Mishnah in Soita, like we said. Because the poshut chat of the pasuk is in fact talking about the king's crown. Ella, Chista Shmach, but look at you, your name is Chista, the Chisdoyin Milach, and your words are beautiful. You're able to come up with very nice drushes. But the chat of the pasuk is not like that. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Ravina Ashkeche, the Ma'abar Ravashi, Dava Godor Klil Lebrate. Ravina one time found Ma'abar Ravashi was weaving a crown like that. Like Rashi had said before, sometimes they would have instead of a crown, they would have a wreath made out of roses or hadassim. So here he's weaving a wreath like that to put on his daughter's head. What about this drosha that Rav Chisda said from the pasuk? So he answers, Dumya de Kohen Gadol beGavri, because since the pasuk is comparing and saying that the Atara is off limits and comparing it to the Kohen Gadol, where the Kohen Gadol is a man, so Aval Benoshi Lo, so therefore the Isser doesn't apply to women in the first place, and women are allowed to wear such tiaras or such coronets or different things like that or wreaths like that on their heads. Now, the Pasuk had said, Zois loy zois, so the Gemara darshins this part, my Zois loy zois, Dorash Rabavira, Rabavira gave a drosh on this, Zimnin omole mishmeid Rab Ami, Zimnin omole mishmeid Rab Asi. Sometimes he would say the drosh in the name of Rab Asi, and in the name of Rab Ami, and sometimes in the name of Rab Asi. Why would he do that? Ben Yehoyada explains in one of those few places in Shas where it mentions this. Ben Yehoyada in one of those places explains he had learned by both of them. Rav Ami was his primary rebbe, so usually he would say it in the name of Rav Ami. But when he was in a place where they respected Rav Asi more, then he would say it in the name of Rav Asi. There's an explanation on it from Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, a deeper idea behind it. He says Rav Avira represents Gvura, the very name Iver means blind, so it represents a powerful kind of Gvura, and Rav Ami and Rav Asi represent two aspects of Bina, and therefore he would be saying his teachings sometimes in the name of one and sometimes in the name of the other, representing two aspects of Bina, and he goes Darichos into this point. Anyway. When Hashem says this nevuah to Yechezkel that the turban and the crown are going to be removed, Omer Malachi Ashoris, the Fnei Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Malachi Ashoris said to Hashem, why should that be? Rabbeinu Shlomo, Zois Lahem Yisrael, should this be for the Jewish people? Sheik Gimul Fanecha B'Sinai Nasa B'Nishma, where they said Nasa before Nishma by Har Sinai, and they have tremendous chosim from that. So the Zois in the pasuk is the Malachim asking, why should this be? The Jewish people have that schus of the Torah, which is called Zois, and for that they should be able to keep their crowns. Marshal refers to the fact by Matan Torah, everybody received two crowns. Amalahen, Sashem answers back, Loi Zois, Lahem the Yisrael, shouldn't this be for the Jewish people? So the Zois, Loi Zois, in other words, is basically a question and answer. Shouldn't this be for the Jewish people? Shehishpilu asagavoya v'igbiru asashofel, whereas the pasuk continues, they lowered what's supposed to be high up and raised up what's supposed to be low. Ve'amidut selam v'heichel, and they put a statue in the heichel. So in other words, they're degrading Hashem, who is supposed to be high up, and they're exalting Avodah Zarah, which is supposed to be worthless, and therefore, because of that, yes, Loi Zois, isn't it right that this should be? Yes, their crowns have to be removed because of this, and they'll be restored when Mashiach comes. Yom Mashiach Ogola. We still have 7:15, 7:25. Actually, so we still have a few more minutes. So the Gemara continues, having mentioned a drosha from a Rav Avira, so the Gemara mentions another drosha from him. Drosh Rav Avira, Zimnin Omola Mishmeid Rav Ami, Zimnin Omola Mishmeid Rav Asi. Again, sometimes he would say the following drosha in the name of Rav Ami, and sometimes in the name of Rav Asi. My Dichtiv, you have a posik in Nochum that goes like this. Koya Mar Hashem, so says Hashem, Im Shleimim, even if they're complete, V'chein Rabim, and even if they're many, V'chein Nogoizu V'Ovar, they will disappear and they will go away. The Poshik Pshat of the Pasuk is talking about this in Nachum, actually, really, whatever, is one of the Tirei Aser. His Nevuah, it's a short book, it's a three Parakim, it's all about Nineveh. So Nineveh, back in the day, you know, Yonah had been sent to get them to do Tshuva, and they did. But then afterwards they relapsed and became Rishoyim again. So Nahum goes with a nevuah to them how Hashem is going to destroy them and punish them for all their averus, especially for the chutzpah of what they did against the Edishter, where like Sancheiriv sent Rav Shekei to insult Hashem and then claim that he doesn't have power to save the Jewish people, etc. So the Navi is saying how they're going to be utterly destroyed. So the Navi is saying, even if they're Shleimim and Rabim, even if they're in complete harmony and there's so many of them, v'chein no goes over, they're going to disappear from history. But now, the Gemara is dashing differently. shlemim meloshen exactly enough. Mitzumtzomim, as Rashi says, exactly enough. So in shlemim, even if a person's mizernus are exactly enough, they're only sholim. He just is just making ends meet, but no more. So im roya odim shemizernus of mitzumtzomim, if a person sees that his parnasa is short, yasim is not short, but just barely making ends meet, yasim ehem tzedakah, he should take some of that money and give it for tzedakah. As the Gemara is going to explain, Nagoizu, which means literally means cut off, the Lashon Giza refers to cutting off some of his money and giving it for tzedakah. V'chol shekein chen merubim, all the more so when it's much, when he has extra. So v'chein rabim, so you should do when it's shleimim, when it's exactly enough, v'chein rabim, and the same way when it's rabim, when there's a lot of it. So either way, a person should be giving tzedakah. My v'chein nagoyza v'ova, what is that part of the pasuk that they'll be shorn off and they'll pass through? Tanad v'ed abishmal, kol agoyza z'minachosa v'os man tzedakah, when a person shears off some of his money and gives tzedakah from it, nitzel medinash of Gehenem, in the schus of that, he'll be saved from the judgment of Gehenem. Moshal of shtei rechelus, you can draw a moshal of two sheep. So you're over the spamayim that are crossing through the river. The avar in the pasuk, in other words, he's darshaning meloshin passing through a body of water. Achas gzuza v'achas shein gzuza. One of them is shorn of its wool, and the other one is not, and is still covered with wool. Gzuza avra, the one that's shorn, passes through safely because there's no wool to get wet and weigh it down. Shein gzuza loy avra, the one that doesn't get shorn, the one that wasn't shorn, doesn't get through because the wool gets all waterlogged and soaked, and therefore it ends up getting dragged down, drowning. The same way, in other words, the nimshal is a person's nechasim are like wool that's going to weigh him down when he's passing through the judgment on the way to Gehenim, and therefore if he doesn't have very much of it, then he'll get through safely. So that's im shleimim. So even if a person's money is shalim, it's exactly enough to make ends meet. V'chein rabim, and all the more so if it's much, if he has a lot extra. V'chein nogoizu, either way, he should be cutting off some of it and giving it for tzedakah. V'over, and then he'll cross through safely. And then now that same pasuk in Nachum continues, the rest of the pasuk goes, v'inisich loy a'anech oy. The pasuk says, it literally means, I've afflicted you, but I won't afflict you anymore. So in Pasuk Chat, it's speaking to the Jewish people. Asher, this whole country of Sancheirav, Nineveh is the capital of Asher, caused tremendous hardship and suffering to the Jewish people, but loy a'anech oy, Hashem says, I'm not going to make you suffer from them anymore. They're going to disappear and their empire is going to fall apart. So now the Gemara explains, V'inisich Oma Mazutra, Afilu Oni Amisparnas Menat Tzedakah, Yatsa Tzedakah. Means even a person who himself is being supported from Tzedakah, and he himself is poor, he himself should be giving Tzedakah. So V'inisich Meloshen Oni, you yourself are poor, nevertheless what it said in the first part of the Pasuk applies to you. And when the pasuk continues, loy anech oid, I will not afflict you anymore, Tony Rabbi Yosef taught a blaise, it means shuvein marim loy simone anius. It means if he does that, if even though he's poor, he still takes out of his own money and gives it for tzedakah, then Hashem will also make it that he won't be shown any more signs of anius. In other words, not only he won't be poor, but he won't even be shown signs of being poor. So the oid, in other words, basically because of the tzedakah, he'll be zoicha ta'ashirus. There's a fascinating and deep explanation from Rav Levick on this piece as well about deeper meanings behind this. Among other things, he points out the shleimim and the rabim refer to respectively shleimim. We find a pasuk about the shvatim shleimim hemitanu. And in fact, Masorah points out these are the only two places in Tanakh where you have the word shleimim. So there and they represent netzach and hoid. So he goes through a whole arichus over there that you see if a person is in a situation where he sees that his parnasa is coming to him b'tzimtzum, as we're saying over here. It's coming to, instead of coming direct through chesed, it's coming to being filtered down through netzach and hoid, and therefore he's barely making ends meet. So yasim and tzedakah, he still does chesed with them, and with that he opens up new channels for the Eibishter's bracha for him. And then he says mar zutra. He brings mar literally means bitter. Zutra means small. So that refers to a very powerful level of gvura. Rav Avira over here also was saying the whole drasha again was also referring to a strong type of gvura. So you can have a person who's even in an even worse situation of gvura. He's actually poor. So nevertheless, Rav Avida is saying, and Mavzutra, literally small bitter, is saying, nevertheless, even he's an oni, he himself is suffering from a tremendous dose of gvura, nevertheless, Yasa Tzedakah, counteract it with chesed, and with that you'll evoke chesed from the Eidishter. And then Rav Yosef comes and says, Yosef representing Ashirus, by Lakith Yosef is called a kesef, he took all the money and brought it into Pare's palace and made all Mitzrayim wealthy, and he represents Yisoid, which is Mashpia to Malchus, so therefore he says, he's the one who says, Shuvain Meir, and Simone Anius, that like this, he'll have to have a tremendous outpouring from Yisoid into Malchus, where therefore he'll have Ashirus. And he says also the word Oid over here, you have the famous expression Yehuda v'Oid l'kra, you have the expression in Gemara Kedushin, the Alter brings it in Shara Yichud v'Emunah, that you don't use v'Oid always means something secondary. So are you going to move a proof, the Gemara says over there, from something that they do in Eretz Yehuda, and va'oid, and additionally it says something in a pasuk, so you don't do it that way. And the Alter Rebbe points out, for example, Azamra le kai va'oidi, oidi means my goof. So here he's saying the same thing, loy anich oid, there won't even be an oid, there won't even be the smallest vestige of anius, because he's doing this, because he's doing tremendous chesed, even though he himself is having a difficult time of it because of Gura. Yud Gimel Adar Aleph, first of all. So it says, by Ikvas Adar Mashiach, it says, Ki loy b'chipazim teitzeyu, we won't have to rush out of Golos, unlike by Tzias Mitzrayim, where we're Ki Baruch Ha'am, but that means when the Geula begins. That means when the actual Geula and the going out of Golos begins with Poyel, then that means it won't have to be in a rush. But as opposed to the last moments of Golos, then every moment of the last moment of Golos is tremendously important, because, as the Gemara mentions in Shabbos, V'yigiyu Yomim, days are going to come, Asher Torima Ein Li Bahem Chefetz, that I have no desire in them, because once Mashiach comes, our mitzvahs are not going to mean as much. As you have the famous expression, Hayom Yom, that when Mashiach comes, that means a bank and not the Golos tag. So therefore, we have to utilize every moment in the most effective way. There we can't say we don't have to be in a rush. That kind of thing we do have to be in a rush for. Then for Yud Gimel Adar Beis, being Tainus Esther, the Rebbe pointed out, Nesicha, that the four Tanesim that we have during the year all have to do with the Churban Bayis Rishon. And therefore, when we talk about that those fasts are going to become a Yom Ratzin, that means the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt, there's going to be a Gula Asida. Tainus Esther is not that kind of fast. It's a commemorative fast. Has nothing to do directly with the Churban. So therefore, on a day when we have Tainus Esther, then it means it has a greater Ilui, it has a greater advantage relative to the other Tanias, that we have the revelation of the Ratzin Elyon, Baruch Hu, Tainus Esther is so great compared to the other fasts that when it comes on the level of the Gilui of the course of Tainus Esther, there's no difference between the state of Golos and the state of Geula. Continuing with halachas of Erev Chaseiros, so we started talking about yesterday where two or more yidden live with a goy in one chotzer, and then we said you need schiras rishus. So that would mean it means that you have to rent the premises from him, and only then can you make an Eruv. So for example, in an apartment building, often what they do is when they want to make an Eruv Chaseiros, in an apartment building you go to the super and you make arrangements with him. When they have community-wide, neighborhood-wide Eruv in, then they deal with the local police precinct or whatever. And it applies, even if the goy actually lives in a different chotzer, but the only way that he gets in and out is through the chotzer where the Jews live, or for example, he lives on the second floor and he goes down by way of the first floor, he would also ask on them, and you're going to need schiras rishus from him as well in order to make the Erev Chaseiros. As far as if the chotzer belongs to a yid and he rented space over there for the goy, then the goy is not oyser, because then he never would rent it to him al das that he would ask them. So even if the owner of the chotzer himself is unsure, in other words, a Jewish landlord, a Jewish landlord of an apartment building, let's say, he doesn't even live on the premises, but he rents to goyim, then you wouldn't necessarily need schiras rishus from the goyim over there. As opposed to if the building is owned by goyim, then you would need that. And the schirus basically is a yid tells him, rent me your rishus for this money. It can give me less than a shava prota. He doesn't have to say explicitly that it's in order to allow carrying. It can't just be that he says, give me your rishus. It actually has to be that he says, rent me your rishus. And also, it doesn't have to be from the goy himself. It can be from his wife. It can be from his mishores. So again, nowadays people arrange it with the super, people arrange it with the police station or whatever. And the idea is, in particular, since you always have in every in every apartment or in every house, you have things that belong to the city, for example, that you can't remove. You have a water, you have a water meter, you have an electric meter, that kind of thing. So that makes it that therefore that their schiras reshus is able to be effective, and now you're able to make your Erev Chatzeres and carry there.